Hey, welcome back. It's Mike McEntee here on AM 950. We're celebrating Friday. I hope you're having a good time. Got another topic here for you I want to talk about. And by the way, your phone call is always welcome today since it's Funky Freeform Friday at 952-946-6205. We often hear Minnesota Republicans saying that a transportation policy, you know the trains versus the roads, pits, you know, greater Minnesota against the metro area. You know, the truth is that's often not the case. That's transportation. But when you get to the telecommunications industry and you get to the private sector, this isn't the government sector, this is the private sector, pitting the rural areas against the metro areas is often a common thing. Case in point, North Carolina, where private broadband industry's approach to the internet is harming rural communities. Joining us to talk about that and how that really kind of applies here in Minnesota is Christopher Mitchell, director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And I think we've said that before, that you got to get a shorter title to get it on your card.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for joining us again, Chris. I appreciate that you could come back on the program.
Well, thanks for inviting me back. And just so people are aware, we did do a report on North Carolina, but we are here in the Twin Cities.
Yes, exactly. And let's start out talking about North Carolina, and then we can get to how that kind of translates here to Minnesota. What is happening in North Carolina?
North Carolina has a really interesting situation in that it has some cities that have built some of the best networks that are available in the country, where the city itself did it. In one case, through a municipal electric utility, and in one case, the city of Salisbury did it itself. And they are serving some, you know, gigabit speeds, 10 gigabit speeds in the case of Salisbury, for those who want the bleeding edge. But the North Carolina legislature in 2011 outlawed either cities building new networks or allowing those existing networks to expand to serve their neighbors. And that came after Art Pope led a bit of a revolution. And I wouldn't even call them, a number of them, Republicans. They're really kind of Art Pope Republicans. To take over the legislature there and really basically enact bills that were written by Time Warner Cable, AT&T, and that sort of thing. So, you know, we have this really odd situation. Sort of the big bad deal that's happening is Wilson had actually expanded this world-class network to one of its neighbors during this period when the law had been removed by the Federal Communications Commission, and there was some legal wrangling, a window of about a year where that law was not in effect. So Wilson built out to its neighbor that had no broadband, and the law came back into effect after the circuit courts overthrew the FCC intervention. So basically, North Carolina's law, temporarily not in effect, went back into effect. The city of Wilson built this great network. They were then violating the law by continuing to operate the network, and so they're being forced to disconnect it in the next couple of weeks. So people in this small town are going to lose this incredible internet access after only having it for a few months and have to go back to paying probably more to get a fraction of the speed from CenturyLink, where they're offering the same very slow speeds in these small towns in North Carolina that many people in greater Minnesota are used to.
Okay. There's a lot of stuff that there to unpack, but I want to hit two topics. First off, why can't the cable companies offer big gigabit service? I mean, when you say 10 gigabit, I'm doing the math in my head. I get maybe 50 megabit if I'm lucky on my download and upload here on my Comcast connection. And I'm doing the math, and in my head, even though I'm a little sleepy, I say, well, that's at least, you know, that's a lot more. That's a lot more. I could stream a lot of movies. I could do a lot of things. I wouldn't have to sit there and wait. It would go whoosh. Why can't, you know, these large companies offer that, or do they?
Well, some of the large companies do, and if you live in the right neighborhood in the Twin Cities, you might be able to get a gigabit package from CenturyLink today. You know, they do charge a bit more than the municipalities often do, although not in all cases, and it's not thousands of dollars. It's on the order of $150 when you look at all the bells and whistles you have to put on it to get it. So in some cases, you can get it. In another year or two, Comcast will be advertising a gigabit connection. Now, this is where it starts to get difficult, and I'm really impressed that you said both download and upload, because that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
The cable systems are going to be able to offer very fast downloads, but they will not be able to offer very fast uploads because of a whole bunch of technology and physics that I won't bore you with, although I'd be happy to. basically, it's very expensive for them to be able to change everything over to be able to allow very fast uploads. So you'll soon be getting faster speeds if you're willing to pay for it from Comcast. Because one of the things we've seen is that if you're in a market where you have real competition, then you're going to pay about half as much than those of us that don't really have a choice. So you would expect in neighborhoods in Minneapolis that where there's this company, U.S. Internet, that's already offering this terrific gigabit service, the Comcast customers that are in that footprint in those neighborhoods of Minneapolis that have an option from U.S. Internet, they're going to be able to pay much less than you or I probably will be able to pay for the Comcast services when they get upgraded.
Okay, so that's good to know that it's available. And by the way, I get concerned. Most people shouldn't be concerned about upload, just to be frank. I do a lot of live video streaming and upload videos that I produce in my business. So that's why I'm concerned about that, because I don't want to sit there and A, wait for an hour while my file uploads, or B, have my live feed go down because suddenly somebody decided to watch a cat video someplace else on the internet. So,
well, let me actually just I think you have a point. I don't think most people, are as worried about their uploads as their downloads, perhaps. But this is the same connections you get at your home are often the ones that are available to the small business down the street.
Mm-hmm.
This has an impact in the neighborhood. And as people are getting the new iPhone cameras that have 4K video, they might be wondering why it takes so long. You know, as our computers continue to have that same wonderful rate of reliability they've had for so long, you may want to be backing things up to the cloud. And it's just going to be more difficult as long as we don't see upstreams increasing. So I think you got a point, but I wouldn't go too far on it.
Okay. The second question I had about North Carolina, when you talked about that, is why did North Carolina's legislature pass a law saying that, okay, you cannot – I mean, basically the law here, let me try to paraphrase it. You can build your own municipal system, but your municipal system can't help another city someplace else. That's what it sounds like this is. Why did they do that?
Well, the law was a little less complicated, depending on how you look at it. Now, I actually want to read the title of it. It was the Level Playing Field Local Government Competition Law.
Oh, my God. That sounds like a lot of whitewash. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think you know where I'm going to be going with this.
Okay.
First of all, this law was fought for 4 years. The industry with the American Legislative Exchange Council, this is one of their model bills, worked for years to try and get it introduced. And it wasn't totally partisan. It was, more Republicans than Democrats, but a fair number of people that are beholden to the telecommunications industry, the big cable and telephone companies, they pushed very hard to try and limit local governments because they said that if we allow local governments to enter into this market, it's going to scare all the investment away. And the AT&T and Time Warner Cable aren't going to be able to invest in our communities. That was their rationale, which, if you've taken microeconomics, you should be aware that actually being faced with competition will tend to lead to more investment. And we know this not just because of economic theory, but also because 5 years after this law passed and local governments have been unable to build new networks, the existing networks have been unable to expand further. We have a list of every place that anyone has announced that they are going to be building gigabit networks in North Carolina, and not one of them is in a rural area. They are all urban regions. So the idea that somehow you would catalyze investment by restricting who can invest in the networks, unsurprisingly, is not true. And we've not seen any evidence that this is a good practice.
Yeah. The whole idea that investors are being scared away just seems like a dumb idea, because if there's money to be made, investors are going to put their money into it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we actually, this is not a unique argument to North Carolina. We saw this here in Monticello, Minnesota. Monticello, Minnesota, which is built a fiber optic network, which offers some of the best capacity in the upper Midwest. They have struggled to break even financially under their business plan. And one of the main reasons is because they lost an entire year when they were being sued by TDS. TDS made this point over and over and over again and said, if cities are allowed to build these networks, then we will not be able to invest. And while TDS was making that point, they were investing as rapidly as they could in Monticello because they were afraid they would not be able to compete. And TDS offers much better service in Monticello now than in most other communities it serves in Minnesota. And all along, they would say, we're not going to invest if we're faced with competition. And nobody really called them on it in the media to say, but you are investing millions of dollars right now. So, you know, to some extent, these companies are so arrogant because they think they'll just get away with saying one thing while doing another. But if they make enough campaign contributions, it doesn't seem to matter.
Obviously, you keep track of this all over the country. Are there other places in Minnesota where local communities are either are building out or want to build out their own systems that they're finding restrictions that maybe won't let them?
Well, Minnesota does have two restrictions that discourage it. It hasn't stopped investment in the way that North Carolina, because North Carolina's law was much stronger than Minnesota's restrictions. And so we do see that discouraging practice. In particular, you have to have a 65% supermajority referendum in order to pass, in order to be able to build a network that offers telephone services in Minnesota. And to give you an idea of how hard it is to get 65%, I suspect Donald Trump's going to get more than 35% of the vote in a lot of places. So, you know, it's incredibly hard. The filibuster only requires 60 votes, not 65 votes. So 65% is an incredible hurdle to overcome.
Are you talking about that as a state legislator voting, or is it you talking about a local referendum election? What's that 65% then?
Right. Oh, state, local referendum. So the state legislatures back in 1915 passed this law. It had to do with telephones back then, but it continues today, that if a local government wants to build a network and offer telephone services, it has to have a 65% supermajority referendum by the local electorate. By the, you know, the local government has to have a referendum.
I don't think I've even seen something like that hit a ballot in Minnesota in the last decade, and it seems like it should, you know, based on what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it has occasionally. And in fact, Monticello passed it with 74% support. Now, North St. Paul saw that, and they decided to have their ballot. And they felt very confident because people love the municipal electric utility in North St. Paul. It's a small, fairly close-knit community, and the local leaders felt like people understood what they wanted to do and were supportive. And it was even polling at like 7 out of 10 supported it a year before they held their referendum. So they set up the referendum. Comcast swoops in a lot of local, a lot of Comcast money goes into groups like the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota that come out and say, "Oh, this is going to be a disaster. North St. Paul is going to lose tons of money. This is a terrible idea." On the day that they had the referendum, there was people showing up in buses that sort of barely knew what was going on, but they'd been told to go cast a no ballot. And there's no ability for the local government to really do a campaign telling people to vote yes, because they're administering the ballot. So that was the last referendum that I remember happening in Minnesota, and I think it scared a lot of people. We see referendum requirements elsewhere, like Colorado, doing quite well, and in part because they have a sort of different arrangement, and they figured out how to set up these real active grassroots local groups committees that involve local businesses and others that organized to get people information so that Comcast isn't alone in spreading information.
You know, it would seem like a local referendum, and I understand how the politics of that work, but it just seems like a local referendum that puts Comcast as the bad guy and you're voting against him would work, because Comcast in many places is about is less popular than Donald Trump is this week. And and it would it would seem like that would be an easy thing to do. But if there is a lot of money that can be dumped in and there's nobody that can run the other side of the campaign, I can see where that would, you know, go the way, other way.
Well, that's true, although, you know, then it depends on the trust in local government, because it's not just Comcast in the abstract, it's local government. And you can easily stoke fear from people in terms of whether they trust their local government. Usually smaller communities like North St. Paul tend to do better because they're less likely to trust the whatever media firm that Comcast has hired to scare people. Mm-hmm. In a place like St. Paul or Minneapolis, actually people tend to be more receptive to Comcast scaremongering tactics because people don't really have a connection with the local government in the same way that one would if you're in a city that has 10,000 or 15,000 people. To give you an idea, in one city in Longmont, Colorado, Comcast spent $260,000 in 1 year, and 2 years later, like $500,000 on this local election in a city of 80,000 people, which was at that time had broken records for how much had been spent on a local ballot initiative in Colorado. One of the things they did was they had people dressed up as firefighters on the street corners with signs that suggested that if you voted for the network, it would result in firefighters being laid off.
What?
Which is, it's crazy. It requires like 8 hypothetical steps that are not going to happen, but it scared people.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Hey, you're going to be in town here, aren't you, to talk about the whole thing about how economic and development and broadband are tied together?
Yeah, that's right. I live in St. Paul, but I'll be driving taking the train actually over to Minneapolis for a conference next week at the Radisson Blue, downtown Minneapolis, where it's 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, talking about broadband and economic development. And there's a lot of really good speakers coming in. There'll be a lot of good panels. So, it'd be wonderful if people wanted to check it out on the internet. If you just go to bbcmag.com, which is Broadband Communities Magazine, those are the folks that organized it. Actually, Senator Klobuchar just announced that she'll be speaking there on Tuesday.
Very cool. So that's open to the public then.
It is. There is a registration fee for joining the conference, but it's a great event, and I think it'd be well worth it for people that are really into this.
And for people who have just fallen in love with your voice here, what are the panels that they're going to be able to catch you on?
Right. Yes. And I'll actually be talking for even longer, although people there can interrupt me more easily.
Sure. But what are the panels you're going to be talking on then?
One is actually just a generic ask the experts. And so we're looking for the audience to bring questions. And they're often questions like, what can our local government do? What can I do as a person? What actually happened in this town? I heard something happened there. Can you tell us more about it? Another panel is talking about basically what we've seen in recent years and what we expect to happen in the near future regarding economic development, in part because some of these networks that we're talking about are built out just for jobs. So rather than building out to residents in some cases, they just build out to business districts and that sort of thing, or else that might just be the first step in a project. So. Mm-hmm. And then the final topic is actually on Tuesday afternoon. I'll be discussing a session in which we're talking about how to organize and prevent more of these state laws from passing and how to roll back some of the ones that already have passed.
That's going to be interesting stuff. If people are interested in this topic, as you said, over to bbcmag.com, check it out, drop on in on the conference. Chris, thanks for your time today. These have been interesting conversations, and maybe somebody listening in Minnesota here is going to start thinking about how they can get faster internet just by maybe getting their local government to get involved.
Yeah, that'd be terrific. Thanks for having me on again.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, more of your phone calls, 952-946-6205. It's Funky Freeform Friday. Anything you want to talk about, give me a call. I'm Mike McEntee.